Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
So what's your union story? Well, the Department of Labor would like you to share it with them. For the AFL-CIO, the convention is over, but now the work begins. And today on the show, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the IBEW in Central Ohio. Welcome to the Wednesday, June 15th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Jessica Fee is going to be our first guest on the show today, and this is our segment we do each and every month with the American Federation of Government Employees, national website, afge.org, sponsor with the show for a number of years now. Jessica comes to us from Local 1631. She's been president of that local since January of 2021, representing 1,200 employees at the Chillicothe VA Medical Center in Central Ohio. And her position at the VA is an advanced medical support assistant. Now, if you've been listening to the show for the past couple of months, we've touched on this issue, and the issue is VA closures. National AFGE has been mobilizing locals, just like 1631, to fight back against the VA's efforts to close dozens of healthcare facilities around the country. And there's been rallies. There's been rallies in Chillicothe. Senator Sherrod Brown, Rob Portman have been there. Locals have been there. I'm looking, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Philadelphia, they all held rallies outside VA medical centers with union leaders, politicians, and veterans themselves, because they don't want to leave these medical centers, and for very good reason. A recent study among hundreds of thousands of older vets found that those who were treated at VA emergency departments had 46% lower mortality than those who were seen outside at private hospitals. And that's what this is all about, privatization, let's be honest. And not only that, the cost of VA, 21% lower. So this is all part of what they call the AIR Commission. And the AIR Commission is the Asset Infrastructure Review Commission. The report came out a couple of months ago. One of the big problems, if not the biggest problem, is the data that they're using. And Jessica is going to talk about that because it's flawed. If it's flawed data, you're going to get a flawed report. So that's the conversation we're going to have with Jessica. Jimmy Miller will be joining us later in the show. And he comes to us from IBEW Local 1105. He's a vice president there and the director of membership development coordinator. He's been in the electrical field since 1996. In 2000, he applied for and was accepted into IBEW's Local 1105 apprenticeship program. So he's got 25 years of field experience. In August of last year, he accepted the position he has now, and that is membership development coordinator. We're going to talk a whole lot about organizing and the workload. Central Ohio, oh my gosh, we've had so many conversations in the past 6 months with Dorsey Hager, who heads the building trades there, about the Intel plant, Amazon, Facebook. And in Licking County, which is just outside of Columbus, Ohio, there's a number of solar projects that is requiring IBEW trained technicians, because these are very complicated projects. So we'll touch on all of that with Jimmy Miller as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, the Department of Labor plans to launch a new worker organizing resource center. This is pretty cool. And the department wants to hear our stories. That's right. So they're working to collect stories and good photos from union members as they prepare to launch the organizing center this summer. I want to drive you to the Labor Department's website. It's dol.gov. dol.gov. And when you get there, look for, there's a search button, and you could share your union story. What has organizing a union meant for you? And there's a form. It's real simple. You could submit your story, just put your name, where you're from, your email, occupation, and there's a box to tell your story. And here's what they want. What made you decide you wanted to organize a union at your job? How has having a union improved your life? What does being part of a union mean to you and your family? Or anything else you'd like to share about your experience organizing a union? And they've got a sample there from Salvatore Herrera. Sal is with the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. And this is what Sal says. I believe organizing a union is the only way to have a voice at work. As workers, we do the work, and by standing with our coworkers, we can collectively bargain for the pay, benefits, and conditions we need to live a dignified life. I mean, it's that simple. That's all you need is pretty much a statement. And the Department of Labor is collecting all of those. And I'm sure when they have that collection, we'll be able to read some on the air, maybe even link up with some of these folks. Again, dol.gov. Share your union story. Got to hand it to Marty Walsh, head of the Labor Department, comes to us from LIUNA, coming up with this idea. Love that kind of stuff. Well, the AFL-CIO convention in Philadelphia is over. I think the takeaway is what Liz Shuler said when she was elected as president, and then Fred Redmond is executive vice president, secretary, treasurer. But they announced, in case you missed it, yesterday we talked extensively about this. They're launching the Center for Transformational Organizing, the CTO. Liz says it is a vehicle that will accelerate and convert the energy of this moment to take our movement into the next century. It will bring together the brightest organizers, technologists, and researchers. And that was the theme of the convention this year, building the movement to meet the moment. And the moment is happening right now with all the people organizing. Starbucks, Amazon. We're seeing food workers, commercial workers, frontline workers who suffered during the pandemic and are still suffering. Non-union shops going union. It's all happening now. We have a friendly NLRB. The guy in the White House is union friendly. So seize the moment. That's exactly what this is all about. And I want to play for you a little clip courtesy of the AFL-CIO that talked about what I just mentioned. And this has been going on for a number of years. The labor movement has risen to meet the moment. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
During the past 5 years, our labor movement has risen to meet the moment, time and time again. In the wake of a pandemic that left the country reeling, the labor movement stepped up like never before. We served on the front lines, organized food banks and crisis services.
When those essential workers rise and they want better working conditions, wages, and environments for themselves and their families, don't scrutinize them because they were once essential and they will always be essential.
We went into action making PPE for essential workers across industries. We mobilized nationwide to fight for our workers' first agenda. We saved workers' pensions and won historic job-creating postal reform and infrastructure investment. We worked together to create the most pro-union administration in our lifetime and to elect two pro-worker senators in Georgia. And we have continued to push for labor law reform, voting rights, a stronger care infrastructure, a fair immigration system that leads to a path to citizenship for thousands of workers and millions of clean energy jobs. Working people across the country have said, enough is enough.
Can't wait to get to that moment when my coworkers and I have ratified our first contract and we can also say, hey, we did it.
We're building our collective strength, coming together to make our jobs better and we're organizing across industries and sectors.
I have to fight for a union. I have to fight for the right to organize because it's the right thing to do.
And we are growing our movement, the American labor movement. This is us. This is now. This is our moment.
Again, that's all courtesy of the AFL-CIO. You can find more at AFLCIO.org. Marty Walsh, by the way, spoke at the convention on Monday, delivering a call to action. He shared his story of growing up in a union family in Boston and how the values he learned as a child inspired the work that he's doing as Secretary of Labor. This is what Marty said. Now, for the first time in a long time, there's a wind at your back. You have the highest level of union worker interest in our lifetime. You have in Washington the most pro-labor administration committing to help. You have a chance to write the next chapter of the labor movement, America's journey to economic justice. That's what it's all about, Marty Walsh. By the way, we have an organizing update, this from Dollar General, where workers recently were given proxy by shareholders to attend a shareholder meeting. But here's the problem. They were not allowed to enter. And get this, the CEO of Dollar General boasted at the meeting about how well the company treats employees and how much it has invested in its workforce. Well, the workers didn't take that lightly. They protested outside that they can barely survive on Dollar General wages, where the medium employee salary is $17,773. That's for 1 year. They also complained that Dollar General intentionally understaffed stores, leaving workers overworked and vulnerable to violent crime incidents. And by the way, they've been organizing for the past several months. Somebody's got to get that message to the CEO that things aren't really good in the stores. And one more here. Workers United announced that two Starbucks stores joined as members this week. A strong start, they said. The stores in St. Louis County, Missouri, and Denver, Colorado, voted unionized 12-3 and 8-5, respectively. They are among over 100 Starbucks stores over the past several weeks and months that have successfully petitioned to hold union elections. And, of course, Starbucks still fighting them. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with AFGE Local 1631, talking about the possible closure of the Chillicothe Medical Facility.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. And don't forget, if you miss a show, we have them all archived on our revamped website. And I'll tell you, it looks really, really good. Check it out, awfpodcast.com. You can still access it through awfradio.com, but do check it out, awfpodcast.com. A lot of information there, guest forms. If you want to be on the show, you can submit something. We'll check it out, and who knows, maybe you'll be the next guest on America's Workforce. Right now, let's go down to Chillicothe, Ohio, and joining us on our live line is Jessica Fee. Jessica is the president of AFGE Local 1631. She's had that position since January of last year, and they represent that local, that is, 1,200 employees at the Chillicothe VA. Jessica, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So how do you like being president? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background. I'm sure you worked your way up the ladder. Talk to me about that first, and then we'll get into this Air Commission report, okay?
So I love it. I love being a voice for my coworkers and trying to be the person there to help them regain their rights and just be there for them and help them in their struggles and their times of need at work. I started out in the union about 16 years ago with AFGE. A few years into my membership, I became a steward and then a chief steward. I spent some time there in the local on 100% official time. And then I left for a bit, had some children, and went back to my regular job. I'm an advanced medical support assistant. I do coordination of care for community care. So when veterans get outsourced to local hospitals, I would coordinate their care. And then I got a call and was asked to come back over and help the local. Things had gotten really tough through the executive orders under the Trump administration, and we had lost several officers. Most of our e-board had left us. So I went back over to help, and before I knew it, I was the last one standing, and I became president. And then we went into an election cycle, and I was elected back in as president.
I keep getting horror stories about the previous administration, and I know it affected morale because it was just one day after another where they're attacking unions from that administration. So that being said, with Biden in Washington now, how have things changed, and how's the morale there?
Well, it was a slow moving train. We thought, you know, when we had a president who was actually standing up and saying the word union, you know, things like it would be a dramatic, quick change in the workplace. It wasn't. It felt like the old administration was still lurking around. It was very embedded. But slowly, things started to move up, change around. And I would say over the last probably 3 months, I think we're starting to almost get back to what I would call a union-friendly workplace. Mm-hmm. Getting them to recognize us as partners and collaborating again was something that we lost because they were actually blatantly told not to talk to the union, you know? Don't talk to the union. So getting them back around to talking to us, administration, and talking to us as partners and the leaders of our workforce, it's coming, but it's still not exactly where it needs to be.
Yeah. These people, they got to realize that unions can be their friend. I mean, you're working, you're trying to help the veterans, our heroes.
Right.
You're working with them day in and day out. You want to make sure that they have the best conditions possible. So you're on the front lines, and that often that just doesn't translate to management. But I know you just got to hang in there. So let's talk about this AIR Commission.
Okay.
And AIR stands for Asset Infrastructure Review. Now, that's a mouthful. And this came out a couple of months ago. We've touched on this, Jessica, with the various guests from the American Federation of Government Employees. And I know Sherrod Brown is on your side. He's been down there. I know there's been rallies at other VA hospitals. So talk to me about what's going on. So Chillicothe, the VA hospital, could be closed. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. They came out with a recommendation. It was finally published in the Federal Register on March 14th. It was delayed about 6 weeks. That the recommendation was a full closure of the old Chillicothe facility, which is about 308 acres, multiple buildings, multiple services. We're one of the last old kind of military barrack style facilities, which makes it different, but it's very nice. We have a pool, indoor pool for the veterans that get for aqua therapy. There's a ball stadium that the Chillicothe Pains lease. We have a golf course. There's a lot of things to do there. So if you were there rehabbing or spending your last days, ideally you don't have to leave the campus. You know, you have things to do when your family comes to visit, you know, recreation time in the evening. Mm-hmm. So it's not just for the acutely sick, you know. It's a lot of end of life, a lot of nursing home veterans, and a lot of rehabilitation. And it's been a wonderful oasis for rehab. So we were really devastated, obviously. You're like, when we heard the news, we're like, this cannot be true. So their recommendation was they were going to replace what we offer with some sort of outpatient clinic, maybe somewhere around the Chillicothe vicinity. I think most veterans are kind of familiar with those standalone clinics. They're usually in small towns. They don't offer a lot. It's like a basic doctor's office. Might have a couple other extra things, but not much of nothing. Definitely not equal to going to a hospital like we have currently.
Are the veterans scared of this happening right now?
Yes. Yeah. So Sherrod Brown's staff and Senator Portman's staff and us, AFGE, and spokespersons from the VA, members from the governor's office, multiple different agencies, really, all attended town hall meetings across 18 counties, maybe 19, I'm kind of losing track, in southeastern southern Ohio. And every meeting we went to, we heard time and time again about the concerns, the struggle to get transportation, the lack of care that they would receive, the lack of access to care, and it was just repeated everywhere we went. And in addition, they repeated how happy they were with the care that they got already at Chillicothe, what they received, and how devastating it would be for them to lose that. And it was a bit bittersweet as a union president to go out and hear all these veterans and their families speaking about how wonderful our workforce is, how great our members are at taking care of them, but then to hear them and fearful of losing that and what will happen to them without that access to health care. And they brought up the concerns that many of us had mentioned. Southeastern Ohio is not a metropolis of healthcare. We don't have a lot of hospitals. You know, you've got one every two or three counties. So it's not as if you live in a large city where you can go a few blocks down the road and find a nice big hospital. We don't have that. So a lot of these veterans, the VA is all they have. And that's all they've ever used, you know. So it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a cultural change when you take them away from the VA hospitals. But then it's literally a lack of access to care in rural southeastern Ohio.
You mentioned transportation. How far would they have to go to get to one of those private facilities to get medical care?
Oh, Lord. Right now, some of them drive 45 minutes to an hour and a half already.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you, we have veterans, our catchment goes clear down to Marietta. Basically, as far as the Ohio River reaches across the southern border of Ohio, that's our catchment. So you could imagine driving from Marietta to Chillicothe alone is already two and a half hours, or from Cambridge, Ohio to Chillicothe, and then you're asking them to go an extra hour and a half to Dayton for VA care.
And Jessica, how many vets are in that Chillicothe center right now?
So across last year, they said that we serviced 20,000 veterans, and that was during COVID. Before that, we averaged 28,000 to 29,000 the last few years before COVID hit.
Amazing. And the 1,200 employees in your local, I mean, are they all working in that facility? And what's going to happen to them?
So we have 60 blocks that have employees. So that they do count into that. We're actually supposed to have, we're supposed to have 1,700 employees. But we have had vacancies that they kind of started this a few years ago during the past administration. They just stopped hiring people. They stopped filling jobs as people left. So we ended up going into COVID with this staffing issue. But it was an issue that that had been created. And we just couldn't hire people quick enough. And we're still struggling with that. And now with the gloom of a hospital closure, I don't think that people are jumping up and down wanting to switch careers and come to the VA when they're talking about closing it. And you rightfully so can't blame people. You know, people, we're working people. We need our paychecks. We need our pension. You know, you can't walk away from that kind of thing. If you're lucky enough to have that good of a job, it's hard to walk away from. So we have in each of these C-blocks, no more than 30 staff at any given C-block, less than most. Like Wilmington, for instance, I think I have 6 or 7 employees there.
All right, Jessica, I have to take a quick break here. Jessica Fee is joining us in our live line. She is the president of AFGE Local 1631 in Chillicothe, Ohio. And that local represents well over 1,000 employees, between 1,000 and 1,200 employees at the VA hospital there, which is slated to close. This is a recommendation. We'll continue the conversation after this. Later in the show, we're going to check in with IBEW Local 1105 in Central Ohio. And I'll tell you, lots going on in Central Ohio, especially with that Intel plant. And Jimmy Miller, who's president of that local, will be talking all about it back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, all you have to do is sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to Chillicothe, Ohio right now. And joining us on our live line today is Jessica Fee. Jessica is elected president of AFG Local 1631, and that was in January of 2021. And then she has her hands full because a couple of months ago, the VA announced that they should close a couple of facilities because they're outdated. And we're going to talk about the data they used here in a minute. But the bottom line is they're going to screw over a lot of vets, people that served our country, our heroes, and they might have to go to private hospitals an hour and a half away if they close a facility. And that's not the only one. I know there's been rallies in Brooklyn, New York, Manhattan, Philadelphia. National AFGE has a website, Save My VA website, where members can find resources to take action against these proposed closures. So, Jessica, talk to me about what's next here. And I know you've had rallies in Chillicothe, Ohio, and in various communities around there. And talk to me about the data. This is interesting, too, because they're saying these have to close because of the research that they did many years ago. There's a problem here. Explain that part to our listeners.
Okay, so we say the data is just bad. The data is bad. It's no good. Obviously, it was done before COVID ever happened. A lot of this was like, we call it creating your own reality. So they did a lot of things where they would limit clinic access or close clinics or close hospital beds, which is actually has to be an act of Congress, that they would temporarily close them. So it looks like the beds were just sitting empty. So they basically created their own data, if that makes any sense at all. It sounds very, like conspiracy theory, but literally you cannot make this stuff up. When we finally seen the data, like, it's very hard to read. It's very hard to understand. And a lot of experts from AFG and Veterans Healthcare Proficiency Institute, Susan Gordon, her team from Save the VA, a huge team of people came in and started working, digging through this data, analyzing it, and trying to figure it out. And you can't really, it doesn't make sense. It's all about data. It's not accurate. We've actually have witnesses that have come forward and said, like, this isn't even the data we submitted. Like, we were tasked with submitting data, and this is not what we submitted from within. So it's very concerning, and it feels very. It leaves you with the question of why, right? Like, why? These are America's treasures. Like, you don't mess with veterans. Like, you don't take things from them.
No.
We promised them health care. You know, it was never a question. Like, we never questioned if we were supposed to deliver this care. One of the beautiful things about the VA previous to this was veterans walked through that door and they got care. They weren't running insurance cards and seeing what they qualified for. The doctors and the nurses treated the veteran for the whole body, what they needed. And it's different than going to a community hospital. There's not as much loopholes. You don't have to get, like, insurance approval, you know, to get that MRI or whatever it may be. So things tend to move quicker. You get quicker, more expedited care. So it's just very, like, it's very concerning. It's left a lot of question marks. And Secretary McDonough of the VA inherited this. This started before Trump's administration, the one that passed this Mission Act into law that included the Air Commission. Biden has inherited it. And it is law. They have to follow the law. But in our conversations with Secretary McDonough, I don't see him, like, feeling good about this either, if that makes any sense. You know, you kind of get the feel of the room. And he sat there and he listened to a roundtable of veterans, him and Senator Brown. And it was very moving. I think I looked around the room at one point, and I'm pretty sure there wasn't a strong guy in the room. It was hard to listen to these veteran stories and how this impacts them and not feel, you know, and not pull at your heart. And they all talked about the data. Like, they've looked at things. They've looked into things. They come there and get care. You know, they know that facility better than most people, much better than anybody coming in from D.C. and crunching numbers.
Right.
And they can tell you this wasn't correct. This is not right. This is not my hospital. So it's really obviously that the most concerning issue is that was what they based their recommendations on, was bad data. And then a lot of the other hospitals, like Muskogee, Oklahoma, they're in the same boat we're in. They're very similar to us. There's a hospital in Georgia, another VA down there, Kansas. And you talk to these other local presidents, and it seems like it's the same story over and over. When I sat down and talked with actually West Virginia's local president, AFG president down there, I said it was like talking to a mirror. She told me almost the exact same story, how they basically created the data. And by closing things, closing this, closing that, limiting access. And then they said, oh, look, we're not serving enough veterans. Well, it's not that we can't serve them. You weren't allowing us to serve them. You know, does that make sense?
As no, I get
left,
it.
They want replacing them, reducing clinic hours, things like that.
So, Jessica, where do we go from here? And what's the timetable on this? I mean, I looked for some information on the national website, afge.org, and it seems like they're looking into next year on this. And these are recommendations. We have to keep in mind, right, these are recommendations to close these facilities. So the way I take that, if they're recommendations and they're not good recommendations and they're based on bad data, you have to rally the troops, which is going on right now. You've had a number of rallies. That's happening. Yeah, so what are you hearing on your end about when they want to get this done?
So the Air Commission is supposed to submit their final recommendations, because we're in a period where the Air Commission, which is a 9-committee panel, who have not even been confirmed by Senate yet. We are, by the timeline, this thing is way behind schedule. So they are supposed to submit their recommendations to the president by January 31st. And then President Biden has from the 31st of January to March 31st to make a determination whether he's going to accept their recommendations or reject them as a whole.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, well, we've got some time here. And there's a bigger picture that I'd like to touch on briefly. Jessica, you know that there's a lot of people that work with government. There's some that are in government that want to privatize everything. I mean, that's the way they like to go. We've heard about this for years. They wanted to privatize Social Security, and that blew up when George W. Bush was in office. And post office, same thing there. Privatize. You got to save money, which is a bunch of BS, as we all know. So it sounds to me that there might be some of those little stinkers on this commission. Is that the case?
Well, that's the concern for sure. There have been people quit the commission already, which I applaud them for, because I could not imagine being known for being a part of the VA closure commission. That does not look good on a resume, I'm sure. But yeah, we think that they're not only embedded in this commission, they're embedded in the VA healthcare system, from central office down. There are people who push this agenda and want to fulfill this agenda. I mean, and you know, we all say follow the money. Like, at the end of the day, somebody's in my heart, somebody will profit from this, and it's not the veterans. The care that it costs us to send them to the community is much more expensive than what we can provide in-house. It does not save money. It doesn't save taxpayer money. It's not better quality care. And it's not our customers aren't satisfied more. The veterans right. are not more satisfied going out to the community versus being taken care of in a VA hospital. So, yeah, it's the concern is I don't think we would have got this far, right, without those people embedded in our system and our administration that want to privatize. And there's money to be made, right?
Yep.
There's money to be made. When you're sending millions to billions of dollars out to the community hospitals, people in those community hospitals who are either stakeholders, stockholders, whatever they may be, are profitizing off of veterans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've seen that for years now. When you have hospitals that are for profit, you see less mm-hmm. care. And you've got data to back up what you just said. I was reading this earlier mm-hmm. from AFGE, the recent study that they did. And they covered hundreds of thousands of older vets that were treated at VA emergency departments. They had a 46% lower mortality rate than those who were seen in private hospitals. And the costs were lower, 21% lower. The proof is right there. It's right there.
It's very obvious. It's not hard to find. That's what's amazing about this whole thing is they've literally created their own reality.
I know.
Data.
There's a lot of reality that's being missed today at all different levels. So that's another conversation. Jessica, we're going to leave it on that note. AFGE.org is the national website. Jessica Fee, president of Local 1631. In Chillicothe, Ohio. You stay strong and stay in touch, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate you.
You got it. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Jim Miller. He's vice president of IBEW Local 1105 in Central Ohio. Lots of building going on there, and he's going to talk about that coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to Central Ohio right now. And joining us on line number two is Jimmy Miller. Jimmy is Vice President and Membership Development Coordinator for IBEW Local 1105. IBEW Local 1105. And today is National Electricity Day, which is significant because we're talking to an electrical worker and there's a lack of electricity in Central Ohio because of the storms the other day. Hey, Jimmy Miller, how we doing today, brother?
I'm doing great today. How you doing?
Good, good. So how extensive was the power outages down there and the damage? Because I heard the storms were pretty violent.
I just heard on the radio there was about 250,000 in Ohio still without power. My little part of the state, we're about 8,000 out right now.
Wow. Wow. The utility's got to be going crazy down there, the utility workers trying to get things back to normal. But you've got a lot going on your plate here because of that Intel plant. And every time I talk to somebody that heads the building trades, they said, you know, The electrical workers, everybody wants to be an electrical worker now because, well, look at the technology. Look at the Intel plant. And everybody wants to make sure they have their devices powered up. So how's that going? Because I know you do a lot of organizing down there, and there's a lot of good things happening in Central Ohio. So talk to me about that part, Jimmy.
Yes, you're right. We are doing a lot of organizing right now. And you're also right. Everybody wants a piece of the pie right now. They basically walk in, used to be you had to beg them to talk to you to even join the union, and we have multiple people coming in every week. We've increased our apprenticeship size to over quadruple our normal size. They've about got that class filled up, so we're getting people that don't have any experience or coming from other industries because they know we have a lot of work, it's good pay, so we still need the experience guys, but we're definitely building our numbers with a lot of new interest right now.
With your apprenticeship program, how many in it right now? And what do you need down the road, especially with that Intel plant?
Total program is probably approaching 250. We used to run about 30 per class. There were five classes. The new class, the first-year apprentices, is over 100 new apprentices right now. I think they're about 125. We've switched to a four-year program, so that's appealing to people without the thought of 5 years of school used to scare people. 4 years seems more doable to them now. We're probably going to need more, but that was a comfortable number we could run with right now with the size of our training center, which is a much larger training center, but it got small real quick once Intel was announced.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, and I understand, too, solar is really, really picking up over there, a number of projects, and I guess that's in Licking County. Can you quantify that? What are we looking at right now?
Yeah, we know we've had a lot of discussions with, I believe it's Leeward Solar. They have a site they want to put a field in northwest Licking County. Still a lot of preliminary stuff going on with that. We have no idea what kind of numbers they're going to need. It's going to be several hundred, I know that. So we need Intel's the big, the big project on everybody's mind, but we do have to remember we have the solar projects that are going to need people, and they prefer to keep those at least 80% Ohio residents. So that's going to pose a challenge because we have a lot of traveling electricians from all over the country here now. That's just another problem we have on our plate right now, but it's definitely something we're taking and in consideration.
Jimmy, I know the workload is pretty intense right now, and I think like some companies are bending the rules, and I'm just wondering, I know you can speak to your apprenticeship program. Now, typically you got to have a high school diploma or a GED, because I guess some companies, and these are obviously the non-union ones, are saying, oh, maybe you don't need that, and if you have a record, felonies are kind of up in the air, minor misdemeanors, well, no big deal on that. But they're kind of taking everybody right now. What do you know about that?
Well, I know on our end, we still require the GED or high school diploma. High school transcript is required for entry into the apprenticeship. We haven't changed our rules on that. As far as the felonies go, it depends what they are. That's more customer-driven, what they'll accept on their sites. One facility, they require a background check. I don't know exactly what they're looking for, but if there's any suspicion that somebody may get escorted off the site, we just avoid sending them there. Intel, it's still early. We don't know what their requirements are going to be with regards to background checks, but we do know they're planning some type of criminal background check. So on our end, we're still trying to maintain the standards we've always maintained. We don't want to bend the rules and flood the market with, you know, potential problems.
Right, right. It makes sense. Yeah. You know, you get out of it what you put into it, and you've got a great apprenticeship program. I'm wondering how you're doing with the schools in that area. And I bring this conversation up many times with people like yourself, because, you know, the counselors for many, many years have been saying, oh, you got to go to college. And in the schools, let's be honest here, they get graded and rated. They get graded and rated on how many they send to college. They get a couple stars on their forehead for doing that. I'm just wondering now, with the workload and what you can make in the trades today, is that changing in that area in Central Ohio?
Yes, it is. In the past, we focused on career centers that had an electrical program. I know this spring we spent a lot of time talking to guidance counselors at high schools. We want to talk to juniors and the seniors. And that was an eye-opener. A lot of them were so focused on either military or college. When we present ourselves with the rates, the wage benefits, pension packages that students can make, or, you know, young adults can make in the construction industry, whether it's electrical or not, a lot of them were very impressed and wanted more information and allowed us to speak to several assemblies of juniors and seniors this spring before we were trying to get into as many schools as we could before the schools were out for the summer.
Now, do you do that? I was reading earlier your bio. I mean, you've been in the electrical field since 1996, so you've got a pretty good history. Do you tell your story on how you got involved in the IBEW?
Yeah, I do. I was 18 when I started, so it was an accident, but it turned out to be a great career for me. But yeah, we always try to give them a little background on how we got our start and where we're at now. And that's appealing to some, because there's a lot of seniors, especially they don't know what they want to do. And I was one of those seniors. They're not set on military. They're not interested in college, and they really don't know what they're going to do with themselves. And we have an opportunity for them if they're interested.
Jimmy, let me ask you about National, IBEW National. Do they help you in kind of laying out the groundwork for organizing and the approach to get more young people in the trades, especially the IBEW?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the, with the Intel project, it's one of the, probably, if not the biggest, one of the biggest projects the IBEW has in the country. So they are definitely hands-on involved with helping us move forward and get a game plan on recruitment. Their focus is more getting the people that are already in the industry working non-union, but they are assisting us with the schools, with veterans programs, even second chance programs for folks that may have made mistakes younger in life. They've paid their dues to society and looking, you know, to get their right foot back on the path. So yeah, National is very involved.
Yeah, that's a great organization. IBEW.org is a national website. Jimmy, I'm going to let you go. It sounds like you're busy. I know there's a lot going on. There's a lot of power that needs to be restored in Central Ohio. So you take care. Stay in touch, because all good things happening in Central Ohio. Okay, brother?
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
You got it. Jimmy Miller, IBEW Local 1105. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the nation and the North Coast Labor Federation. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.